Welcome to the Urology Care Podcast. Let my guest introduce himself.
I'm Bruce Redmond. I'm an endocrinologist, and I am on the faculty at the medical school at University of Minnesota. So endocrinologists are doctors that treat hormone problems, and so the most common problem that we treat is diabetes.
First of all, I'll just ask, who's at risk for diabetes?
It kind of depends on the type of diabetes. There are a couple of types we can talk about. But one of the biggest risk factors is if you have a parent or brother and sister who has diabetes, that puts you at risk. Probably the age is a big factor. So the most common type of diabetes we call type 2. And as people get older, that's a major risk factor. And then the other one for type 2 diabetes is becoming overweight or obese. And of course, in the United States now, that's a major factor because so much of our population is becoming overweight. And then other things that can make you at risk for type 2 diabetes include your ethnicity or race. So African-Americans, Latinos, Native Americans, Asian Americans, those are all groups that have more risk for type 2 diabetes. If you're a woman and you had gestational diabetes, which is a temporary diabetes that occurs during pregnancy and then goes away, but women who have that problem during pregnancy are at more risk to get diabetes as they get older. Those are probably the most, the biggest risk factors for diabetes. But far and away, age and then becoming overweight, obese are the big ones for us in the United States.
Sure. And you mentioned a couple types of diabetes there, type 1, type 2, and gestational. Do you mind explaining the difference?
The main types are type 1 and type 2. Type 1 is what in the past we used to call juvenile diabetes or insulin-dependent diabetes. This is the kind of diabetes that usually shows up in young people and children or teenagers. And it's a diabetes, a disease where the body's immune system attacks the pancreas. That's the gland that makes insulin. And because of that, the cells, the tissue in the pancreas that makes insulin is destroyed. So people with type 1 diabetes have to take insulin to treat that. Then the more common type of diabetes, which most people have, is type 2 diabetes. And that's different. That usually comes on as people get older, if they're overweight or obese, like I said. And it's a combination of not just being able to make enough insulin, but also being resistant to the insulin you do make. So people with type 2 diabetes may or may not take insulin to treat it. They have some relative deficiency in insulin, but not complete, but they're also resistant to insulin. And then gestational diabetes is sort of like type 2 diabetes. When women are pregnant, they become insulin resistant. So if they have a tendency for type 2 diabetes, that can show up during pregnancy. And then when the pregnancy's over, then that usually goes away, but it can come back as type 2 diabetes later on. Those are the major types. Then there's some other smaller types. There's some people who have the disease cystic fibrosis. They can have diabetes associated with that. But the major types are type 1 and type 2. And in the United States, far and away, the most common is type 2 diabetes.
Sure. And is there a way to screen for diabetes? How do you know if you have it?
There are screening tests that we do. There are three different tests that can be done. You can do a fasting blood sugar test. And if it's above a certain criteria, then we call that diabetes. There's a blood test we can do that kind of measures your average blood sugar over the last 2 or 3 months. That's called a hemoglobin A1C test. And that's another test we can do. And if that's above a certain threshold, then we say someone has diabetes. The nice thing about that test is you don't have to be fasting. For the blood sugar test, you need to be fasting. But for this other test, you can do it any time. And then less commonly, we can do what's called a glucose challenge test or a glucose tolerance test, where we give people a certain amount of sugar as a liquid and measure the blood sugar rise. We don't do that much anymore. If we're screening for diabetes, we either do a fasting blood sugar test or we do the hemoglobin A1C test.
Is this a routine screening, or is there people that should be screened? How does that kind of work?
Yeah, there's some certain people should be screened for sure. And sort of the general recommendations are once people get around age 40 or 45, if they have particular risk factors for diabetes, they should be screened. Now, there's a couple of different groups that put out screening criteria. One suggestion is that people who get to be 40, if they're overweight or obese, that they be screened for type 2 diabetes. Some of the groups like the American Diabetes Association are a little more aggressive. They would say that once anyone gets to 45, age 45, they should be screened, sort of irregardless. And if you're younger than that and you have risk factors, such as a parent or brother and sister with diabetes, or you're in one of those ethnic groups I mentioned, or you're a woman with gestational diabetes, that you should be screened even if you're younger than 40 or 45. But certainly people who are overweight and obese, once they get to 40 or 45, that would probably be reasonable to screen them with one of these tests.
What type of doctor does someone see with diabetes?
Well, most people with diabetes have type 2, and most of them are taken care of by their primary care doctor, their internist or their family practice doctor. Now, endocrinologists also take care of people with diabetes. We usually take care of people sometimes who have type 1 because that's a little more challenging to take care of. And patients with type 2 diabetes who may be more complicated, need several medicines or have some complications from diabetes, we might be involved with their primary doctor in taking care of them too. And diabetes is really a team effort. It involves the patient, the doctor. We also work closely with diabetes educators. These are specially trained nurses who can counsel people about how to manage their diabetes. We work with nutritionists, dietitian, because that's a big part of it too. Sometimes we involve pharmacists because this involves a number of medications sometimes. So taking care of diabetes is a whole team approach with the patient, the doctor, and these other people that help us that are very important in managing the diabetes.
What are some symptoms of diabetes?
You know, that's one of the problems with diabetes. It doesn't have symptoms until it gets pretty far along. And that's one of the reasons that we think we should screen people, particularly if they're at risk. But if the blood sugars get really high, people will get symptoms like they'll be very thirsty because they're urinating frequently. They'll be losing weight, actually, because they're losing a lot of sugar in the urine. They might have blurry vision. They might start getting more propensity to infections. So we call it the polys, polyuria, polydipsia, polyphagia. That means a lot of urination, a lot of drinking water, and eating a lot because you're losing calories and losing weight. So when you get symptoms like that, the blood sugars are usually very high. But often a lot of people can have diabetes and not know it because they don't have any symptoms.
Is it painful when you urinate? I know there are some urinary symptoms involved with the diabetes.
Yeah, generally it's not painful. It's just a large volume of urine. Now, if you have an infection in the urinary system, which people with high blood sugars and diabetes are more prone to have infections, genital infections and urinary tract infections, then there could be some discomfort. But in most cases, unless there's an infection, it's not painful. It's just a lot of urine.
What causes the need to urinate so much, and how do you make sure you don't get that confused with someone who might have a similar condition such as overactive bladder?
Yeah, sometimes it's hard, and that's where you have to test for the blood sugar, or you can actually test for sugar in the urine and know if it's if people are having those symptoms because of high blood sugars. But what happens when the sugar level is high in the blood goes through the kidney, and some of that sugar comes out through the kidney, but then the kidney takes it back into the blood before it goes out in the urine. But when you have really high levels of sugar in the urine, the kidney can't bring it all back into the blood, so it spills out into the urine. And when the sugar goes out, it draws water out with it, urine with it. So you have a lot of volume of urine, and there's also sugar in the urine.
Does either type 1 or type 2 have a different effect on the urinary tract?
No, it's the same. It's the sugar in the urine that causes those symptoms. So whether it's type 1 or type 2, you can get the same symptoms. Now, some of the complications of diabetes, of having high sugar in the urine and in the blood for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, can cause other symptoms related to the kidney and the bladder. And those are different than just what's caused by the sugar coming out in the urine.
What kind of symptoms would those be like?
So the big problem with diabetes after you've had it a long time, if it isn't controlled, is that high sugar in the blood going through the kidney starts to damage the kidney. So the kidney isn't able to work well and it starts to fail. One of the signs is the blood pressure can tend to go up, although blood pressure can be high for other reasons as well. But eventually, if there's enough damage to the kidney just stops functioning, and people are at the point where they either have to have dialysis or they have to have a kidney transplant. So that's the kind of thing we're trying to avoid by treating diabetes. It's those long-term complications that can damage the kidney and eventually lead to kidney failure if it's bad enough.
Yeah, how common is it for diabetic patients to develop kidney disease?
Well, fortunately, because we do a better job of helping people manage their diabetes and we have more medicines and things now to do it, it's becoming less common than it used to be, but it's still a major problem. I think the main reason for kidney transplant in the United States today is still due to diabetes or combination of diabetes and high blood pressure. And because so many people are getting type 2 diabetes because we're becoming so obese and overweight as a population, there's more people at risk to get the kidney damage. But we should be able to help people manage their diabetes these days that we can avoid those severe complications like the kidney failure.
Sure. And what types of lifestyle tips, first of all, would you give to someone who's looking to just avoid diabetes?
So there have been some good studies that show that if people who, if they're overweight or obese, if they're able to lose weight, and if they're not active, if they're able to become physically active, they can substantially decrease their chances of getting diabetes. And we're not talking about huge amounts of either one. If you're overweight and you can lose 5 or 10% of your weight, that's enough to reduce your risk of developing diabetes. So if you're 200 pounds and you're overweight, that's losing about 10 pounds. Now, that's not simple, but that's doable. And if you're not physically active, just doing brisk walking about 150 minutes a week. So that's about 30 minutes, 5 days a week. That can reduce your risk of diabetes. Again, those aren't the easiest things to do. They take some effort and time, but those kind of things can make a difference and really prevent someone from getting diabetes.
So what about lifestyle tips for someone who's already been diagnosed?
They're basically the same. If they're overweight or obese, trying to lose weight and eat a healthy diet, doing regular exercise. Now, if they have heart problems or something like that and they're not exercising, they should check with their doctor before they start an exercise program. But you don't have to go out and start running marathons or do heavy weightlifting or things like that. Just reasonable amounts of exercise, like walking briskly, that sort of thing, can be enough to make a difference. So the recommendations to prevent diabetes are the same as what they are for people who've already developed diabetes.
How about sexual dysfunction? Is that a result of diabetes? What kind of symptoms sexually would a patient with diabetes be experiencing?
Sexual dysfunction for men, erectile dysfunction is a major condition that can occur with diabetes. Diabetes is a big risk factor for men to develop erectile dysfunction. And that's for several reasons. The high blood sugars can damage the nerves that help with erections. They can also damage the tissues in the penis that have to become filled with blood to get an erection. So it's a combination of things related to diabetes. So diabetes is a major risk factor for erectile dysfunction in men. If you have really high blood sugars, you are prone to get problems like yeast infections or bladder infections. Sometimes that's how diabetes shows up because of infections like that. And then if you have really severe diabetes that has been around for long enough, you can get such damage to the nervous system that controls sexual function that not only do you have problems with erections, but you have problems with ejaculation. So men may not be able to ejaculate, or when they do ejaculate, it may go the wrong way back into the bladder. You can also have problems. The nervous system controls the bladder, and it kind of controls how we urinate. So if you have severe damage to the nervous system through diabetes, you may have trouble emptying the bladder. So you retain urine, you can't empty, or you may have trouble controlling the bladder. You may have problems with incontinence. Now, fortunately, those types of problems due to the nerve damage are pretty rare these days. But erectile dysfunction is a major factor, and diabetes plays a major role in men in erectile dysfunction.
And what's the difference between kidney disease and kidney failure?
Well, when we say kidney failure, we just sort of mean the severe end of kidney disease. We can pick up when the kidneys are starting to not work 100% with tests that we can do in the blood. And we can also look for signs in the urine if the amount of protein coming out of the urine starts to increase. Now, we all lose kidney function as we get older. That's just part of aging. But most people don't lose kidney function to the point that they get what we call kidney failure. And kidney failure just means the kidney function is so poor that the kidney isn't able to clear the toxins and things that build up in the blood and have to be excreted in the urine. And that's when people start to get really sick. And at that point, you either have to have dialysis or kidney transplant, or you will die from the effects of those things building up. So kidney failure is just sort of the end stage of kidney disease. And we can pick kidney disease up early, and if we can do things like control blood pressure, control diabetes, then we can usually prevent it or try to prevent it from going to kidney failure.
Are you aware of any new research that might be on the horizon that would impact diabetic patients in any way?
Well, there's always research going on because diabetes is such an important chronic disease. So many people in the United States have it. We're still, even though we've known about diabetes for years and for all the things we've discovered about biology and how our bodies work, we're still discovering new medicines and mechanisms that we can use to treat diabetes. So there's always that going on. Probably some of the most exciting work right now is in the realm of more of type 1 diabetes, where we have technology now that will let people with type 1 diabetes sort of manage their, to the point where almost will be a point where they can manage their diabetes with what we call an artificial pancreas. There's insulin pumps that give insulin to these patients all the time, and we now have sensors they can wear on their body that can monitor, can record their blood sugar constantly and tell them what it is. And at this point, the technology is getting such that those sensors can talk to the pump and actually adjust the insulin pump, so it becomes sort of a what we call a closed-loop system, and the patient doesn't have to be adjusting things all the time. That's more relevant for people with type 1 diabetes. Most people with type 2 diabetes don't need an intensive insulin pump regimen like that, but that's very exciting. There's also a lot of work going on still in finding out how we could transplant the islet cells. So those are the cells in the body that make insulin. That, again, would be initially more relevant for people with type 1 diabetes, but ultimately it might be a therapy for people with type 2 diabetes as well. And there's a lot of research going on trying to find how we can develop stem cells. Those are the early cells that can be taken from our body, and we can get those to proliferate, to grow, and make cells that make insulin, and then how we could put those back in someone's body and have them work and have sort of an endless supply of insulin cells to cure diabetes. That's kind of far away from being reality, but that's some of the groundbreaking research that's going on right now.
From a personal standpoint, what got you interested in this disease that affects so many Americans?
Well, when I was in medical school, one of the first classes you take in your first year of medical school is biochemistry. And that's where you learn all of the chemical reactions that go on in the body and all the controls. And that's where hormones come in. And I really like that aspect of physiology and medicine, and how the body controls all its processes through these hormones and the regulation system. So that's how I really got interested in endocrinology and diabetes in particular.
Well, I would like to thank my guest today, Dr. Redman. If you'd like more information, visit urologyhealth.org/diabetes. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us?
No, I'm glad to have the opportunity to talk to people about diabetes. I think it's very important that people are aware of it and that understand what a serious disease it is and how we can do things to prevent it or to treat it.
Thank you so much, Dr. Redman. This podcast has been brought to you by the Urology Care Foundation, the official foundation of the American Urological Association.